How do we continue, carry along, be this unified heart-mind of Sesshin, of sitting together, practicing together for several days after it's over and we return to our so-called ordinary life? In a way, this is a more elaborate or extreme question to the question that we always have when we get up from Zazen. How do we continue Zazening in all the aspects of our daily life? And unless we embrace this and clarify this and make it our practice, then our sitting, whether in daily life or in several days, as such as Sesshin, or just on a day like Sunday schedule where they're sitting for the morning, unless we continue that in some form and find how to nurture and continue and support that, unless we do that, then our Zazen is an artifact that's separate from the rest of our life. And that's not what Buddha Dharma, that's not what practice, that's not what Zazen is. Zazen is our life. Zazen is, if we use the word heart, mind, functioning throughout the day, but in different forms. So sometimes there's the, let us say, more concentrated form called Sesshin, more intense form. Sometimes there's the concentrated form called our daily practice, formal sitting practice. And sometimes there's the so-called less concentrated, but only so-called less concentrated form of moment, our living our life, our being who we are, and being in the intimacy of life of who, with whoever we encounter and whoever shares life with us, being the functioning of our life in all our activities. Now, in one sense, you could say you just do what you do. In a sense, that's true. Just do what you're doing. Eating, walking, driving, talking, working, and so forth. And in one sense, we even include that in some of that in Sesshin so that we can model for ourselves what it is to do that. And yet, Sesshin has rules and format, a container almost, so that we maintain non-talking, non-looking around, and so forth, which isn't appropriate in our daily life. Nevertheless, our daily life, as it is for each one of us, is where our Sesshin continues, is where our sitting continues, is the setting of all the manifesting of who and what we are. And after all, that's what sitting is, being who we truly are. Or, I'll say it a different way, letting go of, seeing through, allowing to become transparent all those self-centered habits, entanglements, and holdings that cause suffering, that cause harming, that create trouble in our life and in the life of those with whom we share our being, who share their being with us. So, I'll get back to the question that started, is what is it we can do to carry this along? Not to carry any particular thing along, but to be ourself, be our Zazening self, our Sesshin self, in the midst of intermingled and interpenetrated with all the things we do in our life, in our relationships, in our activities. It's not a matter of a generalized answer, because there are all sorts of generalized answers, but those are generalized and useless. Useless unless we find a way to make it our own, because in that very same way, you could know the basic points, even the theories about sitting, about Sesshin, about Buddha's teaching, about the four practice principles, but unless it becomes our own to an extent, and little by little we penetrate it and it penetrates and intermingles with our life, unless we do that, then the compassionate way doesn't come forth. Unless we do that, the teaching of life as it is isn't revealed to us, for us, moment by moment by moment. So, I'm starting by posing a question, and now I want you to reflect on this and to see what you can say, maybe what questions you might have about this, so that we could share together this fundamental practice and fundamental support of each other in practicing, because we all practice in a world where we're interrelated with many beings, some who have so-called formal practice, but all of whom, whether they know it or not, whether they can do it skillfully or not, are in some sense or other grappling with this practice called life, this practice opportunity that life offers us of creating suffering by holding on to self-centeredness, holding on to greed, anger, and ignorance, or serving all beings and nurturing wisdom and compassion, that is our natural birthright. That is naturally who we are. The natural, no hindrance, no fear, therefore, right here, beyond deluded thoughts, is nirvana, this nirvana life. So, let's see what you have to say, or to ask, or to bring up. And I'll stop and see. Yes?
I'm wondering, when I'm caught in reaction, and I find my attitude or my behavior is not coming from a place of truth in me because it's reactionary. If it's of any use to make that transparent in the moment with whomever, if there's another person there that I'm reacting to,
yeah,
to be transparent in the moment, or is it enough for me to be transparent with myself? And it seems to me that if I can say, oh, wait a minute, that was a reaction. I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. It brings a certain amount of humility or vulnerability,
uh-huh,
which I don't want to do.
Yeah.
You know?
And it also shares it with the other person, so it encourages their, in a sense, you become modeling for them, whether they pick up on it or not. So, but it all depends on who the person is and your wisdom of what they can hear and what's appropriate. But the first thing, as you said, is even if you don't say it, 1 second, to be able to, for a moment, a millisecond sometimes, to pause and then almost pivot and let go of where you were going, even if it's a very strong, sometimes you almost viscerally have to hold yourself back from continuing. And to pivot. See, in a way, yesterday's case was about how modeling that, where there was the dialogue between Joshu and the questioner, and he went in one direction, he responded, and the questioner pushed him on that, and then he, in a sense, pivoted, if we think of that. You might not remember it, but it's very, it's what, yeah, I tell you, never, you don't have to remember anything that I ever said in any cases. Oh.
Yeah.
So, but it was very much a pivoting, oh, yeah, I don't know that also, or, oh, would you, it's enough that you asked, time to. But the point is that that's very good. It's very good to reflect on that for yourself. Whether you just say it to yourself and notice it for yourself. Sometimes we don't, to use the expression, catch it until it's been 5 minutes after the whole conversation and then go, wow, what was I doing? Or 5 days after. But if it's at that moment, all the better. That's wonderful to model it, even if they go, huh? And it, and then it's just passed. But certainly to model it for ourselves, that at the point that we notice where we've been, what should I say, reactively, habitually speaking before, if I use the word, before our heart, mind is engaged, but our mouth is already going off.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Yes?
What if you don't know who you are? So after years and years of like adapting, fitting in, internalizing everything, what if you just don't know who you are, even thinking about the nirvana? You just can never find it.
Don't know who you are is great. If we really don't know who we are, I mean, that's the first case, you weren't here, but don't know is great. It don't know is a wonderful attitude. The problem is, even when we say to ourselves, oh, I don't know who we are, I am, at the very same time, we're saying who we think we are in our reactive habits, who we believe we are in when we get upset or get hurt. Because we have a very strong, maybe not clearly articulated sense of, he can't say that to me, she can't do that to me, that's not fair, I should be able to. So very much there we do believe we know who we are. See, we know what should happen for me. So in a way, it's, we don't have to know who we are or who we aren't, but it's to notice who we tell ourselves we are by seeing what we're caught up in. See, that in a way, that the practice principles, when they say caught in self-centered dream, That dream is who we dream and believe we are. And we see it in what we hold on to, in what we react to in terms of thoughts and feelings. And right there, it's demonstrated, even if it isn't articulated. And there's nothing wrong with having that there, because we all have that in different ways. You can't push me like that. There, one of the persons I am is someone who can't be pushed. Or, you can't say that to me, or, it's not fair. I'm someone who's supposed to be treated fairly by da-da-da in this and this way. So, practice isn't about getting something more, but ceasing to hold on to what that dream that, in a sense, is covering our eyes and covering our ears so we can't or aren't present, but instead only see what we've covered our eyes with, only hear the story that we keep telling ourselves. So, don't have to know. In fact, not knowing is a wonderful approach to all sorts of circumstances, if we can truly approach it. I don't know, so let's hear what they have to say. Oh, that's interesting. Most of us have lots of things we know. That's why caught in self-centered dream. We know what we know often is a fiction, but we assume it is, and act on the basis of it. We assume it's true and act on the basis of it, justifying getting angry, getting hurt, etc., being greedy, etc. Does that make sense, David? I mean, if you want to say something like, please, I'm glad for a response. There's no...
Well, it kind of sounded like you're saying, so then I could be whoever I want to be in that moment.
Well, I won't quite say you could be whoever you want to be, because if you be whoever you want to be, sometimes who you want to be is someone to, I want to get all that money. I don't want you to have any of it. You know, so it could be who you want to be is just a reactive habit. But what I am saying is we can notice who we are holding on to being, especially if it's not skillful, if it's causing pain and suffering for me or others. Sometimes we don't even know who we're acting as, because it's just happened so fast and it's so reactive without being present. We're not feeling and being present this moment. Instead, our head story is ahead of us. That's why it's called ahead of us. In the sense that the reactive habit, that's the caught and the holding too. Before we even know where we are, we're already doing or screaming or, you know, hurting or whatever, without being present. So in a sense, when we sit, we're almost modeling being present and allowing thoughts, feelings that arise to arise and pass without having to act them out, without having to add on chatter to them. And it's the added on reactive habit or chatter that sometimes gets us in trouble. If it never gets you in trouble, fine. But if it does get you in trouble, then it's worthwhile to attend to it. Or, as Antonia said, maybe pause for a moment. Or maybe pivot for a moment. Yes.
Thank you for making a point of this to go home with it. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. When I'm just thinking of my own life, I certainly feel I have to sit every day to start it off. So occasionally I don't. And I don't like that, but I don't anyway. So that I can be more aware. I think it's an awareness practice of what's going on in my
ways of responding to certain situations. Mm-hmm. So if I can sort of step back and go, oh, yeah, I do that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And aware is both so-called inside and so-called outside, because we're not inside as opposed to outside. Inside, outside is all our awareness. See, awareness includes the floor and the room that I'm in and the other beings. That's my awareness opportunity.
It includes
the floor is my awareness right here, whether I'm standing or sitting on it, whether I see it and feel it and sense it. All the various senses extend in 360 degrees in all sorts of directions. I won't even say past, present, and future, but nevertheless, I'll say it. See, all of that is the awareness, but we don't have to figure it out. We just keep being here, and of itself, we start tasting it. We start sensing it because we are present with it and not filtering it out with our self-centered covering on what I'm going to hear and what I'm going to listen to and what I'm going to think about and what I'm seeing. All of that sometimes becomes a filter for us so that we miss our very life. And you know this especially as an artist and as a painter. The ability to filter out and not see what's right in front of us, which is why you present it to us by painting it so that we begin to notice what's always in front of us in various forms, but which we pass by and aren't present with, don't share life with in the moment we pass by it. See, just like one of my teachers, Soa Nakagawa Roshi, used to talk about the symphony of the highway, or the symphony of driving down the highway and hearing that this doesn't mean something special, just hearing the sounds of traffic, of the air, of the space, just being hearing when you're driving. That includes hearing. As far as I know, our ears and hearing to whatever extent functions, better or worse, okay, that's separate. But however it functions, that's all part of our being present when we're driving or walking. Unless we are so, what should I say, self-entangled that we miss where we're walking, where we're driving, what we're hearing. In a sense, that's why we sit with our ears open, even our eyes open a little, our nose, so that we smell and we feel. It's all sitting upright, is being in all direction. Being non-thinking is allowing everything to come and go of itself. That's the intimacy experiencing. That's what Dogen was talking about yesterday in the poems that I read. Yes?
What about contemplating the opposite of not knowing who you are and trying to grab onto something, but more of living a life where they throw too many structures at you and you believe you're all them. You're a painter, you're a scientist, you're a meditator, you're whatever. It's not that we don't have a practice to try and let go of that, but the environment itself makes it really, really hard to not have a story to go back to.
Uh-huh.
How do we address that?
Well, you could have all those stories, of course. Right now, I have a story. I am a teacher, and I'm supposed to give a talk. So that's what I'm doing right now. But if I hold on to being a teacher, or whatever you want to call me, Zen priest, then I can't meet face to face with the grocery clerk who I ask How much is this? Here's my credit card, please. So you could be everything. Just be it freely. Let it come, let it go. You know, you could keep on changing IDs according to circumstances. So when you're a researcher, then you be the researcher. Then your job is to be a completely, wholly the researcher. And then if one of your coworkers during break time says, I hear you do meditation, could you explain it to me? Then right there, you're a meditator and explaining it to them or sharing it with them or responding. And then if you get home and the phone beeps and you pick it up and, oh, it's my mom. Right there, you're a child and you're speaking to your mother. Or if you're a parent, it's your child and you're a parent and you're speaking to them. So, sure, as long as you could put those on freely and take them off freely, yeah, that's the dance. That's the dance of life. It's when we become rigid that we can't dance. When we become rigid in our ideas and dream of what is, then reality bumps up against our dream instead of just fluidly, easily penetrating it according to circumstances. Then our dream, instead of being just a mist that comes and goes among the many dreams we have, it becomes solid and entangles us. Or I should say different, we entangle ourselves in it, because there is nothing that's imposed on us. Though we have all sorts of things that seem to be, you know, we carry along all sorts of habits and stories, and we discover them sometimes only in the reactions to circumstances. But nevertheless, they're ours in the moment we discover them. They're ours to manifest or to respond to skillfully in a way that it doesn't perpetuate further harming and suffering. Or, as Antonia says, shift from and see, oh, this is the wrong role I'm playing. You know, I thought I was this role, but I realized, no, it's the other role. So I could put down that script and I could pick up the one that's correct for where I am. You know, if I find myself wearing snow boots and step out and then I find I'm on a beach warm sun, if I continue walking with the snow boots, I'm going to have problems. If I take off the snow boots, then I could walk barefoot, or I could have flip-flops, or I could get onto the surfboard. And the truth is, it's often up to us to choose where we are, even though we are where we are. So, if you're walking down the street, you could turn that walking down the street into your opportunity to be present with the houses, the plants, and so forth, the birds and the beings that are on that street, and to use that as your walking practice, just as you walk in the Zendo. Or you can choose to turn that into the fight that you had with so-and-so yesterday and just regurgitate that and, I should have, I could have, they were, it's all because. So, it's our choice often in our life. But the examples I bring up are useful, but it's also useful, or more useful even, for you to talk about both how you do it, as Museki did, Sue did, or talk about where, or as Antonia did, etc., or talk about where you find that it's difficult, or maybe something other aspect of it.
Well, just a quick response to that. Like, in my own life, I know it becomes hard when the label itself sounds pleasant. So it makes it even more difficult, even if you try to be fluid and
What do you mean by that? The label sounds pleasant.
If they say that
you are someone who's calm and peaceful,
uh-huh.
and that sounds good to you,
yeah.
it just reinforces you want to be that even further.
Well, okay.
And then when you're not, it just becomes that back and forth between zero and one. It's like, I'm not, but I thought I was. But I'm not, but I thought I was. And
well,
that's the problem.
In a way, if they say, let's pick that example, oh, you're calm and pleasant, aren't you? And you, on one hand, that's an encouragement. Okay, what does it take? Am I calm and pleasant now? I feel that. They said it. And then you notice, oh, so when you notice that, oh, I feel so angry, I don't feel calm and pleasant with them, they're being, that's the opportunity to see, well, what's going on here? What's the skillful practice with this anger? And the calm and pleasant, in a way, could almost be an encouragement to look at, where's this anger coming, going? What am I believing? What's skillful here? I'm not clear on what it is that's the appropriate thing to do, because it depends on the circumstance that you're in at that moment. And generalities are just that, generalities. If you think, oh, I'm supposed to always be calm and pleasant. Well, yes, no. How is it being peaceful and yet saying, no, you can't take that? Or so on and so forth. Because otherwise, if you get an idea how you're supposed to be, you can't respond when someone shows up at your door and says, give me, or whatever they do. In a sense, we can be sitting, and I'll use that word, be calm and peaceful, seemingly. And we discover, even just sitting upright, being calm and peaceful, all sorts of so-called non-calm and peaceful feelings, thoughts, bodily sensations can arise just sitting in the Zendo. I'm sure you've discovered, well, I can't say I'm sure, but I imagine almost everyone has discovered that. I certainly have at various times. I certainly have was sitting, and all of a sudden, in the midst of my sitting, I was in hell. And I couldn't imagine how I could be in this hell. Where did this come from? I never even... And yet, there it is. And what's the one ability to both embrace that and then to skillfully not entangle in it or build on it? Whether it's in terms of mind chatter, whether it's in terms of bodily sensations, whether it's in terms of dreams that were off, on, and running. Yeah.
Soon I'm going to be moving to a condo.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got, well, two new practices probably coming up. The
uh-huh.
first one is I'm going to have to walk Bella.
Huh?
That's my dog.
Yes.
And she's never had that experience. It's always been open the door and she goes out in the fenced yard. I'm going to have to practice lots of patience because she'll want to sniff everything and I'll want to go back in or something and she won't poop where she should. And all these, so it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's already gotten a little upset with me and peed on the white couch that I'm supposed to give away. So she's picking up all this, you know.
Turmoil.
Yeah.
Change.
And
yeah.
I'll report back.
Certainly.
What happens.
Certainly, dog training is human training.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're dog training, as they say, an old dog,
yeah.
you have to teach an old dog new tricks.
And I'm an old dog, too. Yeah.
Well, we're all old dogs in some sense, yes.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
The truth of the matter is, even if we start practice when we're 18, we've already have at least 18 years of habits that, and not just the habits, but also all the DNA genetic predispositions that we come into life with. We all have our own predispositions in terms of anger, in terms of greed, in terms of tolerating, in terms of abilities and capacities. Each of us are born with our own particular set. That's what we get to work with.
And the dog is too.
Of course. So you've got a good session coming up that's going to continue for a while. And if every time you go out with her you remind yourself of that, then maybe both of you can enjoy it more.
We'll try.
Make sure you get some good boxes of treats to help training her.
Yes, yeah, and things too. I got to mention that. Or my neighbors are going to be upset with me.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a whole new life.
She may love it, though.
That's true, too. Mm.
Yes.
But I appreciate the talks and the discussion. Today, I agree about the daily sitting. It's very helpful. Mm-hmm. Sitting with others is some time. I think a few other things. One, when we're in Sesshin, it's good to be able to be in Sesshin. Mm-hmm. Doing Sesshin more part-time this time, various circumstances have arisen. And it's a little more difficult, just noticing that. I'll just say, put it that way. So it's nice to be able to do it fully. I have experience with doing it that way. But also, a couple of things. One is that delusion is a tough nut to crack, I think. Because I had a bad cold starting at Friday, and you gave me some advice. And I honestly, I don't think if you and Mushin had said the advice you said, I honestly don't think I would have taken it. Even hearing the advice, I didn't really want to take it. Because I'm deluded. I really believe that I can still do a lot of things. Instead of saying, hey, no, not only, maybe I could, but that would necessarily be the most helpful to other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, think about, you know, that them. And so, you know, just, but so I just say it's, it, you know, just to encourage us all that, you know, it's not always obvious. I mean, even, you know, it's just there. And, you know, you get to it when you get to it, I guess. And also, there's one other thing that I would like to mention. At least this is for me. In a way, I have to go beyond a certain habit, a certain mind, for example, for quite a while now. That started actually before the July session. I start to notice, you know, maybe I've been doing too many of these. You know, I should probably take a break. It's a thought.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thought. But, you know, let it go. Signed up for July. You know, and similarly came up for August. But I really feel like that's just a habit. I mean, yeah, I mean, there could come a time when I wouldn't be able to do them or wouldn't want to do them. That's all fine and good. But it's more that it's a some sort of a, I love it. You know, I love it. I think it's a wonderful opportunity. So why would I give up something that I love, you know, just because I have this belief? But and yet that's just a habit.
Yeah.
It's just sort of ingrained. It comes up. And anyway, so, you know, it's an ongoing practice of being present and seeing what the skillful thing is. And certainly there are circumstances which come up. And maybe the practice helps us address, okay, what's reality? Getting a little beyond the delusion. But I do think having teachers who can maybe see a little more clearly is also helpful. But they can't live our life. We have to live our life. And we have to be the ones who want a certain life more than anything else. And that's all I'll say.
Thank you. Yes?
A little something. First of all, I really appreciate being able to practice with everybody, and I feel like I've been able to.
Can you speak up a little bit?
Yes, I will.
Thank you.
So I'm saying thank you just for allowing me to be here with all of you and Shogyo and I felt like he came and saw me a couple times, so it was my turn to come and be here with all of you, so thank you. And one of the things, actually, that struck me that, David, you brought up was I remember when I first came to practice, Zazen and sitting, and I really didn't feel like I knew who I was either. And it's not... I remember one day I was out trimming like a bush with my teacher, and everything she did, I'm like, okay, you know, and I just kind of was, you know, and finally she looked up at me and she said, you know, it's not about, you know, you, I know you're doing the no self thing, but you know, you still gotta have a personality. So I think. I think you can. She said, you know, I know you're trying not to have a no self, or you're caught up in no self, but you still have to have a personality. So I think that, you know, we can get caught up in all of these kind of Zen phrases and talks and things and what we think it should be, or, you know. But, I mean, you never know what's going on in people's head, and we're all the same, really.
Thank you. There's a nice story. It's a Hasidic story. Some of you know I occasionally bring up Hasidic stories. So in reference to that, there was this rabbi, his name was Reb Zusya, and someone said something to him about, oh, when you go to heaven, you're going to be, everything is perfect because you're so great. He says, no. He says, don't imagine like that. He says, you know, when I go to heaven and show up there after I die, they're not going to ask me, why weren't you like Moses or anything like that. That's easy. They're going to ask me, why weren't you like Reb Zusya? In other words, your job is not to be like some idea you have of anyone else or any other great person, but you have to be wholly and uniquely who you are. That's what Zazen is. That's what your Buddha as who you are, not as some image or as an image on an altar or as a image you figured out. You have to manifest it as your own life. It's through your own life that it manifests. So, yeah. Your job is to manifest in the forms and habits and tendencies and abilities and capacities that you have to manifest the teaching and the practice. That's all of us, our... And everyone you meet, you're the manifesting of the Buddha who you are to them. Not because you do anything special, but because you are who you are. You are being, just this moment is being the compassionate way that your life manifests. The wisdom and compassion that your life manifests. Yes, Jeff.
Life and death are of importance.
Yeah.
And with it, I'm going to say my only chance.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that for right now. And I'm going to also say that I have this difficulty where it seems to be slipping away as my memory is slipping away and as, you know, as
yes.
You know, as I'm dealing with life and death in a way that I could use all the help in the world to figure out how to deal with it. I don't mean to be dramatic, but...
Yeah. It's being the memory the way it is today for you, not the way it was or should be or is for anyone else. Being the functioning as it is for you today, whether you're remember a lot or remember a little, whether you could only hear a little or hear a lot, whether you're strong or weak, it's always because as you are and as we are is the coming together of the cause and effect perfection of right now. It's not supposed to be any different. It's perfect as it is, and we do our best with it.
I wanted to stay on the path that I was on.
Yep.
And I know it's ridiculous, and that's why I'm saying it out loud right now.
Yeah.
I wanted it to stay on the path that I was on.
Right.
A little bit of success, a little bit of comfort, a little this, a little that, but it's dying.
Yeah.
It's dying.
And for all of us, it always changes. And it's perfectly okay for it to be the way it is as you are. And there's improvement possible by doing our best with the way we are. That you can improve it. It's perfect as it is. And there's improvement possible by doing our best with it, as opposed to getting entangled in our stories and dreams about what could, should, etc.
Isn't this what Master Ma was telling us? Sun, face, moon?
Yes. Yeah. Well, if you say so.
I think I just did.
What did you say?
Oh, I did one of those talks. Sun, face, Buddha, moon, face, Buddha.
It's okay. You're welcome. Thank you. See, each of us can do it to the extent and the way that we can do it with our capacities and abilities as they are now. Not as they were yesterday and not as they should be if I had really worked out and gotten better this and that and that and this. But as we are now with all the forces and abilities that have come together in our capacity right now. Do our best. And we can improve. Yes, Antonio.
I just wanted to say something in response to what David was saying. It made me remember in 2002 or 4, somewhere in there, I was studying with a teacher, and she could hear. I was telling her, you know, I don't feel like I know who I am. And in our talks about that, she could hear my self-judgment in that. And she said to me, well, I think you have to start with a more generous view of yourself. And you have to like yourself to really allow yourself to bloom. And I realized I had a lot of self-judgment around, well, I don't know who I am, everybody else knows who they are, and I'm just an imposter, and, you know, and a try on this, a try on that. And it was very clarifying for me, even though there's no merit in that.
Okay. Thank you all.